English Listening Comprehension Test, B1 Level, Valencian Community, 2020. Now, you will hear the instructions for the listening test. You will have time to read all the questions for all the tasks in the exam. At the beginning of each listening, you will hear this sound. You can make notes or write your answers while you're listening. But remember that you will also have time to write your answers at the end of each exercise. Please read the instructions for each exercise carefully. If you have any questions, ask them now, as you will not be able to talk during the listening test. Please look at task 1. You will hear fragments of a program about the Great Fire of London. Decide whether the following statements are true or false. Write your answers on the answer sheet. 0 is an example. You will hear the recording twice. You now have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the exercise.
Just after midnight on Sunday the 2nd of September 1666, a fire began in a bakery on a London street called Pudding Lane. By the time it was put out, 4 days later, over 13,000 houses, nearly 100 churches and many important buildings had burnt down. And around 100,000 people had been made homeless. We call it the Great Fire of London. In those days, houses were mostly made of timber and had thatched roofs, which caught fire easily. People had candles to see by and cooked food in ovens heated by an open fire. You only had to drop your candle or forget to put out the fire for the whole house to catch fire too. And as most houses were built closely together in narrow streets, fire could spread quickly from house to house and from street to street. That's what happened that night in the bakery in Pudding Lane. It belonged to Thomas Farriner, the king's baker, which was an important job. Each night, as Thomas went to bed, he made sure that no candle was left burning in the bakery and that the fire was put out too. But that night, Thomas must have been too sleepy to check the fire properly, because after he'd gone to bed, a spark must have flown out of the fire and landed on the floor. And soon, the whole kitchen was alight. In a wooden house like that, fire could spread very quickly. Flames leapt through the ground floor rooms and up the stairs, until at last the smell of smoke woke Thomas in his bedroom. So Thomas and his family crawled out of the window and onto the roof, and from there in through a window into a neighbour's house. But by now, the fire had started to spread from Thomas's house to the next one. And then the wind blew it to the next and the next. In 1666, there wasn't a proper fire service with trained firefighters. There were some fire engines too, nothing like the ones we know today. They were like big wooden barrels that could be filled with water, and the water could be pumped onto the flames. When all else failed, whole houses could be pulled down to make a fire break, which was a gap that the fire couldn't jump across. Sunday, 2nd of September, 1666. On the night the fire began, Londoners were woken by church bells ringing. It meant there was a fire in the city. Some people didn't worry. There were often fires in the city. They went back to sleep. Others got up to have a look and packed their belongings in case the fire should reach them. Everyone wanted to leave, and the streets were jammed with horses and carts carrying people and their belongings to the city gates. The people who'd lost their homes and had nowhere else to stay camped in the fields outside the city. They looked back sadly at their homes and wondered what sort of life they would have once the fire had finally been put out. On Tuesday, the 4th of September, the fire was at its height. It was a raging inferno. All was swallowed up in the fire. It seemed nothing could stop it. But there was just one thing left to try. To make the fire breaks more quickly, houses would have to be blown up using gunpowder. Otherwise, the fire would never be put out, and the whole city would be destroyed, including the King's Palace and the Great Tower of London, where huge stores of gunpowder and other ammunition were kept. That same night, the fire reached St. Paul's Cathedral. The cathedral had stood for over 500 years, but in a few hours, it had gone. Meanwhile, important Londoners were discussing plans for the rebuilding of London. It would cost a fortune, but it had to be done. Everyone agreed that London must never be allowed to burn down again. So this time, it would be built in stone and brick, materials much less likely to catch fire than thatch and timber. And slowly, improvements were made to firefighting, though it would be many years before London or other cities had the protection of the fire service we know today.
Now listen again.
Just after midnight on Sunday, the 2nd of September, 1666, a fire began in a bakery on a London street called Pudding Lane. By the time it was put out, 4 days later, over 13,000 houses, nearly 100 churches, and many important buildings had burnt down. And around 100,000 people had been made homeless. We call it the Great Fire of London. In those days, houses were mostly made of timber and had thatched roofs, which caught fire easily. People had candles to see by and cooked food in ovens heated by an open fire. You only had to drop your candle or forget to put out the fire for the whole house to catch fire too. And as most houses were built closely together in narrow streets, fire could spread quickly from house to house and from street to street. That's what happened that night in the bakery in Pudding Lane. It belonged to Thomas Farriner, the king's baker, which was an important job. Each night, as Thomas went to bed, he made sure that no candle was left burning in the bakery and that the fire was put out too. But that night, Thomas must have been too sleepy to check the fire properly, because after he'd gone to bed, a spark must have flown out of the fire and landed on the floor. And soon, the whole kitchen was alight. In a wooden house like that, fire could spread very quickly. Flames leapt through the ground floor rooms and up the stairs, until at last the smell of smoke woke Thomas in his bedroom. So Thomas and his family crawled out of the window and onto the roof, and from there, in through a window into a neighbour's house. But by now, the fire had started to spread from Thomas's house to the next one. And then the wind blew it to the next and the next. In 1666, there wasn't a proper fire service with trained firefighters. There were some fire engines too, nothing like the ones we know today. They were like big wooden barrels that could be filled with water, and the water could be pumped onto the flames. When all else failed, whole houses could be pulled down to make a fire break, which was a gap that the fire couldn't jump across. Sunday, 2nd of September, 1666. On the night the fire began, Londoners were woken by church bells ringing. It meant there was a fire in the city. Some people didn't worry. There were often fires in the city. They went back to sleep. Others got up to have a look and pack their belongings in case the fire should reach them. Everyone wanted to leave, and the streets were jammed with horses and carts carrying people and their belongings to the city gates. The people who'd lost their homes and had nowhere else to stay camped in the fields outside the city. They looked back sadly at their homes and wondered what sort of life they would have once the fire had finally been put out. On Tuesday, the 4th of September, the fire was at its height. It was a raging inferno. All was swallowed up in the fire. It seemed nothing could stop it. But there was just one thing left to try. To make the fire breaks more quickly, houses would have to be blown up using gunpowder. Otherwise, the fire would never be put out, and the whole city would be destroyed, including the King's Palace and the Great Tower of London, where huge stores of gunpowder and other ammunition were kept. That same night, the fire reached St. Paul's Cathedral. The cathedral had stood for over 500 years, but in a few hours, it had gone. Meanwhile, important Londoners were discussing plans for the rebuilding of London. It would cost a fortune, but it had to be done. Everyone agreed that London must never be allowed to burn down again. So this time, it would be built in stone and brick, materials much less likely to catch fire than thatch and timber. And slowly, improvements were made to firefighting, though it would be many years before London or other cities had the protection of the fire service we know today.
Now you have 1 minute to check your answers. Please look at the second exercise. Listen to a story about Beethoven's life and choose the correct option A, B or C according to what you hear. There is only one correct answer for each question. Write your answers on the answer sheet. Zero is an example. You will hear the recording twice. You now have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the exercise.
Ludwig van Beethoven was a brilliant musician and one of the greatest composers that ever lived. And although he wrote his music almost 200 years ago, it's still hugely popular today. You can hear one of his best-known works at the moment. It's called The Moonlight Sonata. Beethoven was born in 1770 in a town called Bonn in Germany. His grandfather and father were both musicians at the royal court, and in those days it was common for children to take up their parents' profession, so when Beethoven was aged just 4, his father started to teach him music. But unfortunately, Beethoven's father made him practice, and woke him up in the night to make him perform for guests. He would be angry if Beethoven played poorly, and declared the boy an embarrassment to the family. You might think this would have made Beethoven hate music, but it didn't. In fact, throughout his life, Beethoven always found great strength in music. When Beethoven was 10 years old, he started with a new teacher, a very patient man, and under his tutorage, Beethoven became a fine pianist. He started to improvise, and then wrote his first piece of music aged 11. Then, when Beethoven was 17, he went to Vienna, where he played for Mozart, who was so impressed that he said Beethoven would make a noise in the world someday. Beethoven had hoped to study music with Mozart, but had to rush back to Bonn because his mother was severely ill. By the time Beethoven returned to Vienna, 5 years later, Mozart had died. When Beethoven wasn't performing or composing, he would often go into the countryside and listen to all the sounds of nature around him, streams, birdsong, the weather. These sounds were very important to him. He would store them in his mind, and then they would become inspiration for his music. By 1800, he had composed his first symphony, which is a long piece of music written for the whole orchestra to play. The audiences found it quite strange and new. It wasn't entirely what they were used to. But then, a year later, came the big change in Beethoven's life. He'd been suffering from severe ringing or buzzing in his ears, which was making it hard for him to hear music or conversation. He confessed to a friend he was worried about going deaf. He tried many different hearing aids, without success. And so Beethoven, the great musician and composer, began to go deaf. It is said that he broke 2 pianos because he played them so loudly in his attempt to hear the music. To help him play and compose, he used a special rod that was attached to the soundboard of his piano. He would bite on the rod as he played the piano, and the rod would transfer the vibrations from the piano to his jaw. This gave him a greater perception of the music. He gave up playing with an orchestra because he couldn't hear the other musicians. But he kept composing. Masterpiece followed masterpiece. But Beethoven himself could not hear a single note of the music he composed.
Now listen again.
Ludwig van Beethoven was a brilliant musician and one of the greatest composers that ever lived. And although he wrote his music almost 200 years ago, it's still hugely popular today. You can hear one of his best-known works at the moment. It's called The Moonlight Sonata. Beethoven was born in 1770 in a town called Bonn in Germany. His grandfather and father were both musicians at the royal court, and in those days it was common for children to take up their parents' profession, so when Beethoven was aged just 4, his father started to teach him music. But unfortunately, Beethoven's father made him practice and practice, and woke him up in the night to make him perform for guests. He would be angry if Beethoven played poorly, and declared the boy an embarrassment to the family. You might think this would have made Beethoven hate music, but it didn't. In fact, throughout his life, Beethoven always found great strength in music. When Beethoven was 10 years old, he started with a new teacher, a very patient man, and under his tutorage, Beethoven became a fine pianist. He started to improvise, and then wrote his first piece of music aged 11. Then, when Beethoven was 17, he went to Vienna, where he played for Mozart, who was so impressed that he said Beethoven would make a noise in the world someday. Beethoven had hoped to study music with Mozart, but had to rush back to Bonn because his mother was severely ill. By the time Beethoven returned to Vienna 5 years later, Mozart had died. When Beethoven wasn't performing or composing, he would often go into the countryside and listen to all the sounds of nature around him, streams, birdsong, the weather. These sounds were very important to him. He would store them in his mind, and then they would become inspiration for his music. By 1800, he had composed his first symphony, which is a long piece of music written for the whole orchestra to play. The audiences found it quite strange and new. It wasn't entirely what they were used to. But then a year later came the big change in Beethoven's life. He'd been suffering from severe ringing or buzzing in his ears, which was making it hard for him to hear music or conversation. He confessed to a friend he was worried about going deaf. He tried many different hearing aids without success. And so Beethoven, the great musician and composer, began to go deaf. It is said that he broke 2 pianos because he played them so loudly in his attempt to hear the music. To help him play and compose, he used a special rod that was attached to the soundboard of his piano. He would bite on the rod as he played the piano, and the rod would transfer the vibrations from the piano to his jaw. This gave him a greater perception of the music. He gave up playing with an orchestra because he couldn't hear the other musicians. But he kept composing. Masterpiece followed masterpiece. But Beethoven himself could not hear a single note of the music he composed.
Now you have 1 minute to check your answers. Please, look at the third exercise. You will hear a part of a program in which they talk about unusual hotels. Match each hotel to the correct statement, B to J. There are two extra statements you do not need to use. Write your answers on the answer sheet. Zero is an example. You will hear the recording twice. You now have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the exercise. Example.
Factsverse presents Most Unusual Hotels. Natura Vive. This hotel is located on the side of a mountain in Cusco, Peru. Each separate room is located in a different spot on the mountain. To get to the hotel, guests are required to climb up to their room. If you're an adventure seeker, this hotel could be the one for you. Number 1. Cedar Creek Treehouse. This is an amazing hotel located on Mount Rainier. To get to the hotel, you would climb the Stairway to Heaven, which is an 82-foot high spiral staircase which surrounds a Douglas fir. From there, you would walk over the Rainbow Bridge to the 100-foot high Treehouse Observatory. You would then be taken to the floating treehouse 75 feet into the sky. The hotel requires that guests are in good health, and for safety reasons, guests must be 12 years old or over. Number 2. Capsule Value Conda. This is a relatively strange hotel located in Japan. You would actually sleep in a capsule, which has a blind that you can draw when you sleep. The shower and bathroom are located on the first basement floor. Because your room basically consists of a capsule, you would need to keep your baggage in a locker. Each capsule contains a television, radio, and a dimming light. It is a very economic way to travel in Japan. Number 3. Bubble Tree. Bubble Tree is a transparent bubble tent that gives you a window to the world. These tents look more like goldfish bowls than something that you would sleep in. A bubble tree is much more than a traditional camping tent. They contain wardrobes, shelves, and electric lights. These tents can be rented across France for around £400. Number 4. Dog Bark Inn. This is one of the most unusual hotels. The Dog Bark Inn is a bed and breakfast guest house which is located inside the world's biggest beagle. Guests enter through the body of the dog, which also has a private second-story deck. The sleeping quarters are located in the dog's head. This is a quaint little hotel run by the sweetest couple imaginable. Number 5. The Poseidon Undersea Resort. The Poseidon Undersea Resort is a 5-star underwater hotel located in Fiji. The hotel actually is not opened yet. However, they are already taking reservations. This is the first and only underwater hotel in the world. According to the website, they're accepting advanced reservations. Number 6. The Panda Inn. The Panda Inn, located in China, is the world's first panda-themed hotel. There are large stuffed pandas in each room. All 32 rooms in the hotel are decorated with panda art, furniture, towels, telephones, and stuffed animals everywhere. While you won't find panda meat on the menu, there are dishes that are shaped like pandas. If you love pandas and have $110, you can stay at the Panda Inn. Number 7. The V8 Hotel. This is a great hotel for anyone who loves cars. It's located in Böblingen, Germany, and it has car-themed rooms. Guests sleep in car-shaped beds with large gas pumps and other car-themed decorations in the room. The best room in the place is the Mercedes Suite, which is located in the air traffic control tower of a former airport. The suite is spread out over 4 floors and has a rooftop terrace.
Now listen again. Example.
Factsverse presents Most Unusual Hotels. Natura Vive. This hotel is located on the side of a mountain in Cusco, Peru. Each separate room is located in a different spot on the mountain. To get to the hotel, guests are required to climb up to their room. If you're an adventure seeker, this hotel could be the one for you. Number 1. Cedar Creek Treehouse. This is an amazing hotel located on Mount Rainier. To get to the hotel, you would climb the Stairway to Heaven, which is an 82-foot high spiral staircase which surrounds a Douglas fir. From there, you would walk over the Rainbow Bridge to the 100-foot high Treehouse Observatory. You would then be taken to the floating treehouse 75 feet into the sky. The hotel requires that guests are in good health, and for safety reasons, guests must be 12 years old or over. Number 2. Capsule Value Conda. This is a relatively strange hotel located in Japan. You would actually sleep in a capsule, which has a blind that you can draw when you sleep. The shower and bathroom are located on the first basement floor. Because your room basically consists of a capsule, you would need to keep your baggage in a locker. Each capsule contains a television, radio, and a dimming light. It is a very economic way to travel in Japan. Number 3. Bubble Tree. Bubble Tree is a transparent bubble tent that gives you a window to the world. These tents look more like goldfish bowls than something that you would sleep in. A bubble tree is much more than a traditional camping tent. They contain wardrobes, shelves, and electric lights. These tents can be rented across France for around £400. Number 4. Dog Bark Inn. This is one of the most unusual hotels. The Dog Bark Inn is a bed and breakfast guest house which is located inside the world's biggest beagle. Guests enter through the body of the dog, which also has a private second-story deck. The sleeping quarters are located in the dog's head. This is a quaint little hotel run by the sweetest couple imaginable. Number 5. The Poseidon Undersea Resort. The Poseidon Undersea Resort is a 5-star underwater hotel located in Fiji. The hotel actually is not opened yet, however, they are already taking reservations. This is the first and only underwater hotel in the world. According to the website, they're accepting advanced reservations. Number 6. The Panda Inn. The Panda Inn, located in China, is the world's first panda-themed hotel. There are large, stuffed pandas in each room. All 32 rooms in the hotel are decorated with panda art, furniture, towels, telephones, and stuffed animals everywhere. While you won't find panda meat on the menu, there are dishes that are shaped like pandas. If you love pandas and have $110, you can stay at the Panda Inn. Number 7. The V8 Hotel. This is a great hotel for anyone who loves cars. It's located in Böblingen, Germany, and it has car-themed rooms. Guests sleep in car-shaped beds with large gas pumps and other car-themed decorations in the room. The best room in the place is the Mercedes Suite, which is located in the air traffic control tower of a former airport. The suite is spread out over 4 floors and has a rooftop terrace.
Now you have 1 minute to check your answers. This is the end of the English Listening Comprehension Test, B1 Level, Valencian Community, 2020.